and interviews both Sharon D. Nelson and John W. Simek, principals of the nationally known computer forensics and legal technology consulting firm, Sensei Enterprises, Inc. Sharon and John are co-authors of the 2010 Solo and Small Firm Legal Technology Guide and the Electronic Evidence Handbook. Sharon is also co-author of the book How Good Lawyers Survive in Bad Times. They discuss the good, the bad, and the ugly of today's social media and how lawyers can most effectively use this new channel of distribution for their ideas and communicating their expertise to potential clients.
Sharon and John, thanks for joining us today. It's going to be a real pleasure for me to have both of you on.
Well, thanks, Ed, for asking us.
Yeah, thanks, Ed.
John, let me start, I guess, with you, because we're going to talk about social media today, and perhaps you can help us understand what's the primary purpose of social media for the lawyer.
Well, I guess basically it's going to be marketing. So it's a way to establish your expertise, whether you're using, you know, Twitter or blogs or those types of things to show that as a lawyer you're the go-to person. We see a lot from the Twitter side, especially where folks are, they will follow people that have a particular quote expertise, if you will, or knowledge in a particular area of the law, and so it's the social media is a way for the lawyer to differentiate themselves in that regard.
Well, Sharon, how effective then is the social media for the lawyer? I mean, John talks about it being a marketing tool and it's a way to get your expertise known, but there are a number of different platforms, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and of course, how the heck can you get anything across in 140 characters to persuade somebody that you really know what you're talking about?
Well, I think we're going to talk a little bit later about the specific applications, but in terms of effectiveness, I think the jury is still pretty much out. It can be such a time suck for all of the social media to be involved with this, and lawyers need to control that time. If they want to use it, that's fine, but I always tell them to set themselves, whether it's 20 minutes a day or whatever it is, so that they're not forgetting their business, because you can really drown in this stuff. We currently have 67% of all lawyers reporting that they're on at least one social media site, and of course we can't separate that stat out to know how many are using it for business versus personal use. Clearly, I think blogs are a very good idea, and they're generally lumped in with social media. Blogs in particular have had a great deal of success for lawyers, establishing their expertise, raising awareness of their firm. They add content to the website on a regular basis, and by doing that, they help with search engine optimization, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's less known how effective social media is for marketing in a law practice, but I can tell you, and this just happened today, I met online through social media a gentleman by the name of Rob Robinson, who is now working for Applied Discovery. Rob and I did not actually physically meet until this past March at Tech Show, but we've been friends online for a couple of years, I think respecting each other's knowledge and integrity. And out of that came a deal which was announced in the press this morning, where we are partnering with Applied Discovery to do an offering that has to do with the analysis of social media use in law firms and corporations, along with the risk it presents, and also how to handle social media, the tools that exist to govern it from within an organization. Now, that's a pretty big deal for a small company like ours to be partnering with Applied Discovery, and that came out absolutely of social media and nothing but social media. And I think that's an example of the best of all possible results, but I don't know how often it happens.
Well, first, congratulations. But secondly, are we talking in terms of social media separating other things from blogs? Because blogs, I understand how they can be effective. The other stuff, I'm not quite sure.
Well, I do think that there has been success. I've certainly experienced it because primarily through Twitter in my case, which is somewhat unusual. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, but Twitter I use to disseminate useful information about computer forensics, data breaches, social media, legal technology, and you know, I have in excess of 1,000 followers now, and many of them are people of some recognition in the industry, and just getting the expertise out there, I think can be very helpful. And, of course, what I do on Twitter also feeds to my Facebook page, so my friends see that as well. And I have many friends who are in the legal industry, so if they're not watching Twitter, they're watching me on Facebook, and yet I only have to use Twitter to feed both. And I have not yet hooked it to LinkedIn, but that's next.
Well, so. Clearly this is not inexpensive. I mean, if you say that you are spending, say, an hour a day doing all the stuff, the broad category of social media, including blogs and so forth, an hour a day times 5 days a week times 50 weeks, just saying at $200 an hour of legal billing fee, you're talking about a cost of $50,000 in time. So with that kind of backdrop in terms of cost, which applications would you suggest are the best ones to use and why?
Well, I think for lawyers who are just starting out, LinkedIn is like posting a resume. So that's a non-threatening thing, and at least you're out there. If you do choose to use Twitter, then, as I said, you can feed it to the other sites, to Facebook and to LinkedIn. I don't think most people actually want to Twitter. I think that probably for most lawyers that's not a good solution. I think everybody needs to claim their Facebook name, their law firm name, just to keep, number one, someone else from doing it. But you can make Facebook also into a LinkedIn-like resume page, and you can post stories that are applicable in your area of law and demonstrate your expertise. You can become engaged in groups. You can join groups that are legal-oriented or subject matter-oriented. For instance, if in Virginia, if you wanted to belong to a group that's discussing family law issues, just being involved in the conversation can sometimes be helpful. But one thing I do want everybody to think about using is YouTube, which is also called social media. Videos are now just absolutely critical. Typically 1 to 2 minutes videos. I don't recommend doing it yourself because the quality tends to be relatively poor. And I do recommend that you establish a firm YouTube channel and put keywords in the titles of your videos, particularly because recently Google actually announced that it had altered its algorithm to elevate videos artificially in its search engine results. So as a for instance, we have videos, and one of them is how to recover deleted text messages. And it's just shocking the number of calls and emails we get off of that video, and we've got 12 of them. So, you know, just by having done it ourselves, I tell lawyers all the time, no question that these videos really work because so many people, especially the younger folks, really, really, really want to look at a video. And they want to see their potential lawyer. They want to see if the lawyer sounds like somebody who really knows what they're talking about. It's just worked.
Well, I can't agree with you more wholeheartedly. We're posting a YouTube video every week, and ours run anywhere from 4 to 10 minutes a piece talking about practice management advice and specific tips. And it's been now more than a year. I can't say that... I think that what we're doing is really helpful in terms of content. I think we have a ways to go yet in terms of the Hollywood-ish, if you will, you know, capability and pizzazz and all that stuff. But in terms of content, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's a great way to get yourself out there. How does a lawyer get started? Talking about YouTube, talking about the other social media, if the lawyer hasn't yet done it. And particularly if you're in a firm, what are some of the aspects that you should consider?
Well, I think first off is you need to decide which one of the applications or which ones, if you're going to do multiple, that you want to get involved in. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the Facebook? Do you want to start with the Twitter? You know, as Sharon said. And then that's the first decision. And to kind of help you, I think, a little bit with that, I would recommend that you search around for areas of practice and people that you might know, and what are they doing? You know, what is your, quote, competition doing? What are your colleagues? What arenas are they involved in? How are they doing it? Once you decide that, it's just a matter of going to the Facebook site, going to the Twitter site, whatever, creating or establishing your ID. Certainly read the help screens. All of these apps have help to them, so if you're not familiar at all with how to maneuver through them, And one of the areas that you want to be very cognizant of are any of the security settings that are there and how to change those, restrict particular things if you need to restrict things. Because remember, when you're on the internet, it tends to live forever. It's never ever gone. So that's why you need to kind of shape yourself and kind of walk a little bit, if you will, but and not just run and jump into these things. That's certainly what I would recommend folks do anyway.
Well, one of the things that is clear, as you've mentioned, is that it tends to have an extended life, and sometimes it can come back to haunt you if you don't do it right. I think that one of the things that we probably all would agree with is that this is not a medium for personal pleasure, if you will, or to show off what you did at the last ball game or how much you can drink or what have you, because those kinds of things can come back to haunt you. But rather, if focus this as a business tool, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And maintaining that can be very difficult. One of the resources that I would suggest for your listeners, Ed, is the new book by Carolyn Elephant and Nicole Black called Social Media for Lawyers. Because how you maintain it depends on what your use of the media is. And so you've got to determine, I think John kind of referenced this, you've got to determine what your objective is, and based on that, you're going to figure out how to maintain it. But this is the first time I've seen a book that's specific for lawyers discussing how to use social media. So that's a resource I would really take a look at. And, of course, you can Google it, because there's all kinds of articles out there now about social media for lawyers. So you Google social media lawyers, you're going to be overwhelmed at what you find.
Mm. And in terms of maintaining a presence, how frequent is one's involvement? If you're not going to do this 20 minutes a day or an hour a day, what kind of involvement, what kind of frequency do you have in order to be effective?
Well, I'll tell you, I consider that my electronic evidence blog, Ride the Lightning, has had just a phenomenal number of people that follow it, and I now have more than 90,000 individual site visits, which doesn't even include the RSS feed. So clearly blogging is a very successful form of social media, and I devote to that probably an hour and a half a week, and I do two posts, and I generally do them on Tuesdays and Thursdays on the assumption that people are gone on Friday thinking about the weekend, and they come back Monday and they're overwhelmed. So Tuesdays and Thursdays seem to be very good days for doing that. In terms of my Twitter, which feeds my Facebook, I will do Twitter no more than 20 minutes a day. And I think that's not an undue amount of time to spend if you're really going to try to feed both Twitter and Facebook. That's not too bad, and most lawyers could probably do that. It does have a financial cost, so what you have to figure out is, are you getting a return on that time that's greater than, you know, the money you could have made? But most solo and smalls, their dockets aren't usually 100% full, so they do have a little time to do the marketing.
So if you want to promote your practice instead of going out in the garden or riding your bike, as I might do, you could spend your 20 minutes on the internet working the social media and see what results occur.
Absolutely, and of course you want to measure those results, and you got to figure out how best to do that. But it's very certainly, if people contact you because of a video, you tend to know that, and they contact primarily via email, and you'll see right away that they watch the video. It's very clear from what they say they watch the video. So that's great to know that. And then you've got to track whether the case actually comes in or not. And that's what lawyers are very bad at. So they need to figure out, depending on what they're doing and how they're doing it, they need to figure out how to monitor the results.
Well, we talked tangentially a little bit about some of the pitfalls. What would you suggest that a lawyer has to avoid in order to do it right, in order to get the credibility, in order to bring the business in the door?
Well, I think, you know, Sharon talked a little bit about it potentially, and you mentioned it as well, Ed, about potentially being a time suck. So that's, I think, number one, is not to get too involved in this thing, because, you know, as you did the math, it can get pretty expensive from a billable perspective if you just take too much time doing this stuff. But I think from a pitfall perspective, you certainly don't want to be out there pushing it so hard that you're shilling yourself, because that actually is going to turn people off, number one. So back to what I said earlier, you want to be viewed as somebody that has a particular expertise in an area and has knowledge about a particular area and wanting clients to come into you to use your services. There's some other areas, too, I think that you have to be kind of careful of, and I'll talk specifically about LinkedIn and the recommendations section of LinkedIn. You have to be careful about those. You've got some ethical issues and some state bars that may look at those recommendations of LinkedIn as being unsubstantiated advertisement, et cetera. So that's kind of a squishy area lawyers need to be careful about. We're seeing a lot of times, too, and we do this ourselves, before hiring people, as we're out there looking at the social networking sites and seeing what kind of presence a potential employee may have. That's good and bad. Certainly, you can't discriminate based upon what you're seeing there if you see, because now you know someone's particular age or race, et cetera. So you've got to be a little careful in that realm as well. So that's kind of some of the areas that I would be careful of as an attorney and a potential employer.
But as I said earlier, one of the things you do want to do is to keep your beer drinking forays to a minimum.
That's not
discriminatory, as far as I know yet.
At least you don't want to memorialize them on Facebook.
Right.
But you know, it's a good point that you mentioned that, Ed, because it's not necessarily, you know, you. Remember that social media is accessible to a lot of other people. So when you're attending an event, whatever, you may not be the one posting the photos. It may be someone else that's posting them of you.
Good point. It reminds me of my wife's comment, it's always better to be overdressed than underdressed. It's always better to be sober than not sober, in this context anyway. Well, you mentioned the bar ethics. Are there any ethics opinions in the country yet published about how and when to use social media?
The ABA model rules thus far don't have anything directly on point, although social media obviously is subject to the general rules, which is to say some of the mistakes we have seen is lawyers have failed to maintain client confidentiality because they've posted things on social media. Clearly, even though it's not specific to social media, you can't do that. The rules would prohibit it. Every state has ethical rules regarding advertising, so you've got to be very, very careful with those. In some states, you would have to actually file your YouTube videos with the state bar authority. So I always tell people, read the advertising rules to your particular state, because it's going to vary. So there's no overall thing that one can say, but be very, very careful with that, because people forget that social media can be regarded under the rules as advertising. John mentioned LinkedIn recommendations, and I can tell you they've caused all kinds of heartburn here in Virginia. And this is not just on LinkedIn. It can be on the website, too, but where lawyers choose to use testimonials or recommendations, in many states, and certainly true here, you can't make unsubstantiated comparisons. You can't have somebody say that you're the best attorney in Fairfax County, Virginia. That's just not permissible under the rules. And, of course, the general rules say you have to be honest in your communications, so you can't say that you went to a law school you didn't go to. In terms of state bars, what we've seen so far is the Florida Judicial Ethics Advisory Committee, which issued an opinion that a judge having an attorney friend on a social media site is not a good idea, should not be done, because it makes it seem like the lawyer is in a position to influence the judge. And in North Carolina, we've seen their judicial board reprimand a judge for befriending somebody on Facebook, another attorney, and then discussing an open case. So we've seen those two from the judicial perspective. The only one I know of, Ed, and of course one can't be aware of everything, but the only one I know of other than the judicial ones is from the Philadelphia Professional Guidance Committee, opinion number 2009-02, and they specifically said you cannot pretext in order to gain information on a social media site, that is deceptive conduct and not permitted. That's the only one I've seen, and again, it's a city, it's not a state. I have not seen a state that has directly addressed social media, although I'm willing to be corrected and told that someone else has. But I actually looked this morning, and I was unable to find one easily.
Well, I know one example, though not
the category of social media, but still having the same implications. On a particular listserv, one lawyer asked the opinion about a particular judge that was sitting in his case, and another lawyer gave a not quite so favorable reaction to that judge, and that lawyer coincidentally appeared in the judge's courtroom the following morning. Nobody knew that the judge was online. And so that is something you want to be very careful about.
Timing is everything, isn't it?
Timing is everything, absolutely. Aside from the consequences that we've talked about thus far, what are the consequences that perhaps you can summarize for us of doing it wrong? What's the impact to the lawyer?
Well, I think, you know, we've hit some of the highlights there. It certainly is, as Sharon had mentioned, in some of the recent pieces where we've had, you know, judge and lawyer, you know, friending each other or doing whatever, and the consequences is potentially having your case thrown out or maybe even sanctions, you know, maybe coming down the road, potentially a lawsuit from employees, you know, as far as the when it's dealing with employment stuff, depending on what's going on as far as the social media sites and what may or may not be said there. I think Sharon kind of hit a little bit on the ethics things, you know, is to talk about in your particular state what the state bars may do, because the disciplinary action may be against you as well, depending on what you're posting or what you're doing there. And there have been several instances and cases where lawyers have you know, put identifiable information out there. You know, one, I think it was in Illinois, one lawyer that did had enough identifiable information, even about clients, et cetera, even down to what their prison numbers were, if you will. So you've got the whole confidentiality thing, and I think that particular woman does, what, 60 day suspension, Sharon? Was that the one?
I believe that was 45. I can't remember. 45, 60, but...
Right.
Suspension.
Yes, suspension. So, you know, those are some of the consequences that,
right,
that can result.
Well, I think to end our conversation on a positive note, if we look at social media as just one more channel of communication, one more path to distribute your knowledge, your expertise, that has practice development and marketing consequences for your benefit, I think we're probably better off in that light. And with that, we then can evaluate, looking at the metrics that come in as we do it, whether it's effective for us or whether it's not. But certainly, as was said in another context, it's a brave new world, and you kind of just take a deep breath and move forward. John and Sharon, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been my pleasure to have the opportunity to have this discussion with you.
It was a lot of fun, Ed. Thanks so much for inviting
us. Yeah, thanks.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. You can read more about this and other topics from the business of law at www.lawbizblog.com, or start your own discussion about this topic at www.lawbizforum.com. Join today. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.